focused by U.S. and Iraqi troops in what they call Operation Swarmer. The commander of a multinational corps in Iraq told reporters today that 31 suspected foreign fighters and militants are in custody. More than 50 had been detained, but some had to be let go because they'd done nothing wrong. The military also said several large underground weapons caches were uncovered. Lieutenant General Peter Corelli says he expects the operation to continue several more days, but critics have questioned the timing of this offensive, which comes days before the third anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, and right in the middle of the presidential push to rally support for the war with speeches. Corelli says there was no attempt to time this to anything. A federal appeals court says Tennessee drivers can pick license plates with the message, "Choose Life." A state office of the American Civil Liberties Union had won a lower court battle with a ruling permitting the anti-abortion tags unconstitutionally promotes only one side of the abortion debate. In a 2-1 ruling, this higher court says government one-sidedness on the issue might be ill-advised, but it says the Tennessee law establishing the license plate doesn't violate the First Amendment. Abortion rights proponents complain the state doesn't offer those with the other political views a similar way to express them. The bill promoting a choose choice plate had failed. It's been hobbled, but the prosecution is being allowed to proceed with the case in the death penalty trial of Zacharias Moussaoui. Federal judge deciding to allow the government to present substitute aviation security witnesses. That partially reverses this week's ruling to bar all aviation security testimony after the prosecution admitted that a government lawyer coached witnesses. This is Air America Radio News.
to you, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here on Air America Radio. Yeah, it's St. Patty's Day. Thank you very much for joining us. Happy St. Patrick's Day, truth seekers. I can't think of a better way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day than to chat with Camilo Mejia, the first conscientious objector in Iraq, who spent a year in prison for refusing to, in his words, kill innocent people in that country. So tell you what, get your shillelagh, pour a Guinness, grab a bony lass or laddie, and join the parade. Too bad not everyone can join the parade. Did you read this thing in the Times about the parade today in New York City? Once again, the good Irish Catholics who organized the parade wanted to keep gay folk out. Unbelievable. The Speaker of the New York City Council, Christine Quinn, happens to be a lesbian. And she wanted to wear a symbol like a gay pride pin or a button or a sash while marching alongside other council members and gay supporters. But she was told by John Dunleavy, the parade chairman, that it's not going to happen. And it didn't, apparently. The problem here, this always happens. A lot of folks say, well, you know, it's not the queers that I don't like. I love queers. I just don't like what they do. You know, which is nonsense. That's stupid. This guy John Dunleavy compared Miss Quinn to neo-Nazis and the Klan. Yeah, in an interview in the Irish Times, Mr. Dunleavy was quoted as saying, if an Israeli group wants to march in New York, do you allow neo-Nazis in their parade? If African Americans are marching in Harlem, do they have to let the Klan into their parade? Jesus, God. Ms. Quinn, who was asked by reporters about these comments, said they were so outrageous I don't even think they need a response. Why does this happen every year? What is it? You know, Mr. Dunleavy says Irish Americans take part in the parade mainly to honor their heritage, not their lifestyle. Parade officials have contended that the festivities are private and deeply Roman Catholic, and that homosexuality is contrary to church doctrine. How about child molestation? Where does that fit into church doctrine? It must be. Apparently, it's sanctioned. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to piss you off if you're Irish Catholic tonight. I'm not. Or Polish Catholic. I'm not trying to piss you off. But the Roman Catholic Church allows child molestation, encourages it. What, Kathy?
I was just going to say, I think it goes a little far to say it encourages.
Well, wait, let me explain. If it were discouraging child molestation, when they found a priest who was buggering little boys, they would remove the priest immediately, turn him over to the authorities, and send his ass to wherever they send child molesters. But that's not what the church does. When they find out that a parish priest is buggering little boys or buggering little girls, they just move him to a different parish. Now, if that's not encouraging or sanctioning child molestation, pedophilia, what the hell is?
Okay, point taken.
Thank you. You're not even Irish.
The hell I'm not Irish. What the hell are you talking about? Where's my shillelagh?
Yeah, all right. So, Mr. Dunleavy said that she's more than welcome to march as a leader of the city council, but no buttons or decorations in any shape or form. We're not going to have any of those little leprechaun things where a couple of little leprechauns are holding hands. No. Why does this always happen? Why is the church, that's how the Catholic Church identifies itself, the church, What does the church have against gay folk? All right, Camilo Mejia is going to join us. What time? In about half an hour, Kathy? Okay. Okay, I've got two Irish jokes here. I got to do this. Two men were sitting next to each other at a bar. After they've been drinking a while, one guy looks at the other guy and says, "I can't help but thinking from listening to you that you're from Ireland." The other guy responds proudly, "Yes, that I am." The first guy says, "So am I. And where from about Ireland might you be?" The other guy answers, I'm from Dublin, I am. First guy responds, this is, so am I, Shorten Begora. And what street did you live on in Dublin? The other guy says, a lovely little area it was. I lived on McCleary Street in the old central part of town. First guy says, faith, and it's a small world. So did I. So did I. And what school would you have been going? The other guy answers, well, now, I went to St. Mary's, of course. First guy gets really excited and says, so did I. Tell me, what year did you graduate? The other guy says, well, now, let me see. I graduated in 1966. The first guy exclaims, oh, the good Lord must be smiling down upon us. I can hardly believe our good luck. We'll wind him out at the same bar tonight. Can you believe it? I graduated from St. Mary's in 1966, my own self. About this time, Seamus walks into the bar, sits down, orders a beer. Brian, the bartender, walks over to Seamus, shaking his head, and he mutters, aye, it's going to be a long night tonight. Seamus asks, why do you say that, Brian? Brian answers, the Murphy twins are drunk again. Well, I happen to love it. I think that's the best Irish joke.
I like mine better. Do mine. Do mine.
Okay, one more. This last one. An elderly Irish couple has invited another elderly Irish couple over for dinner. The two men engage in a conversation. The one says, this meal is delicious. Yesterday the wife and I went to a restaurant where we also had some wonderful food. It was also quite affordable. The service was good, and it had a nice ambience. I strongly recommend it. Oh, sounds great, said the other man. Well, what's the name of that restaurant? Says the first man. Let me think. What do you call them again? Those flowers, they have thorns, and you give them to people that you love. You mean a rose? Ah, yes, rose. Rose, what was the name of the restaurant we went to yesterday?
That's funny.
Yeah, wait till you and I get to that point. I mean, wait till I get to that point. You never will, because I'm so much older than you are. But
you know, Molly's Irish.
Of course she is.
Our daughter's Irish.
Molly Malloy?
Molly Malloy. And she looks Irish, which is funny because neither of us look Irish.
Okay.
Hey, pass the harps.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm already getting emails now about my rotten Irish accent. I'm sorry. That's just, it's a characterization of an Irish accent. Sorry if it offended you.
Always something to offend somebody on the Malloy Show. We could get on the air and read the phone book, and we get emails from somebody who was offended by the way you either pronounced a name wrong, or it was an inflection in your voice, or why do you sound so angry?
Can you reach over your shoulder there, darling? Give me another Guinness. The program's only 14 minutes into it. I could have another drink, you know. No, I know I'm stereotyping. Of course I am. You know, the Irish, of course, the Irish, you're all drunks, right? We're all drunks. Every one of us. We're all just the drunks. No, we're not. But that's a stereotype. But it doesn't bother me. I've gotten into a couple. The last bar fight I was in was a long, long time ago. Yeah, I had my ass really whipped pretty bad. But it was your typical pub fight, and it was over a woman.
Last week.
No, it wasn't last week. What are you talking about? It's a long time ago. I don't do that anymore. I don't dare. If I took a swing at somebody, I'd have an instant heart attack. I'm too old. I'm too out of shape. All right, a quick break here. When we come back, we'll stop all the fun and frivolity and just get dead serious, as we usually do on this program. So stick around. Happy St. Patrick's Day, no matter what your nationality or heritage is. This is Air America. I'm Mike Malloy. From County Clare. There'll be folks from, I'm sorry, this is Air O'America. County Cork. They'll be marching in the big parade right here in old New York.
sure, and March the 17th is the day I'll set aside. A day when every Irish heart is busting out with pride. I'll have me old shillelagh and that old silk hat of mine.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
A good news story from AliveGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed the difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at AliveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
Up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Celtic Pride. It's 22 past the hour, and I just I would like to say happy St. Patrick's Day to our New York Bureau Chief, Teresa, and her significant other, Donny, who is, by God, from Ireland, plays in an Irish band, plays frequently around the city. So, Teresa and Donny, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody, as a matter of fact. Operation Swarmer. That's the photo op put together by Bush's friends in command positions in Iraq. They are attacking open field after open desert field. If you've been following this, even Time magazine now. Michael Ware, blogging at time.com, says, contrary to what many television networks erroneously reported, the operation was by no means the largest use of air power since the start of the war. In fact, there were no airstrikes, no leading insurgents were nabbed in an operation that some skeptical military analysts described as little more than a photo op. What's more, Michael Ware writes at time.com, there were no shots fired at all, the units met no resistance. The operation, which doubled the population of the flat farmland in one single airlift, you know, where they went, was initiated by the intelligence from Iraq security forces. Oh, God, well, no wonder. Oh, listen, there's a whole bunch of insurgents over there. Where? Over there. I don't see anything over there. Behind the tree. The one tree? Yeah, man. And that house next to it. Oh, okay. The someone named Lieutenant Colonel Skip Johnson, commander of the 187th Battalion, 3rd Combat Brigade of the 101st Airborne, said about the Iraqis, they have the lead. He said that to reporters yesterday. By this afternoon, Friday afternoon, the major targets seem to have slipped through their fingers. Excuse me. Iraqi Army General Abdul Jabbar, I thought he played basketball, says that Samara-based insurgent leader Hamad el-Taki of Mohammed's army was thought to be in the area. And Iraqi,
you're just making these names up.
I am not. And Iraqi intelligence officers were still working to compare known voice recordings and photographs with the prisoners in custody. So they've snatched some people. Well, they should get the comparisons of the voice recordings and photographs done within, I don't know, at least, what, 2-3 years and a few sessions of intense torture. Now, this is from Time.com. Michael Ware, blogging at Time.com. With the Interior Ministry's Samara Commando Battalion, the Iraqis, the soldiers had found some 300 individual pieces of weaponry. Pieces? Like mortars, rockets, plastic explosives in 6 different locations inside the sparsely populated farming community of over 50 square miles and about 1,500 residents. The raids also uncovered cordless telephones used as detonators in homemade bombs, and so on and so on. Oh, it says here, before loading up into the helicopters for a return trip to Baghdad, Iraqi and American soldiers and some reporters helped themselves to a woman's freshly baked bread, tearing bits off and chewing it as they wandered among the cows. That's what it says here. For most of them, it was the only thing worthwhile they'd found all day. Okay. That's blogged at time.com. Check it out yourself. And backtoiraq.com says essentially the same thing. According to reporters on the scene, there are no insurgents, no fighting. 17 of the 41 prisoners taken have already been released after just one day. This blog goes on to say the number of weapons caches equals 6, which isn't unusual when you travel around Iraq. They're literally everything. Or everywhere. As noted, about 1,500 troops were involved, 700 American, 800 Iraqi, but get this, in the area they're scouring, there are only about 1,500 residents.
Not a single shot that's been fired, yada, yada, yada. It also says it will be the Iraqi intel that provides the cover for American military commanders to throw up their hands and say, well, we thought the bad guys were here. And this this writer, Christopher, says it's hard to blame the military, however. Stations like Fox and CNN have really taken this and ran with it. Fancy graphics, theme music. Thanks to a relatively slow news day, the generals here are also under tremendous pressure to show off some functioning Iraqi troops before the third anniversary. Jesus, can you believe this? Can you believe this? Well, of course you can. And I do too, because we live in Bush's America. Camilo Mejia when we come back. This is Air America.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. I was walking in the park and somebody stopped me and said, I'm tired of taping up the leaks in my old vacuum and then having to buy another one every 2 years. I'm going to buy an Orrick. Friends, why should manufacturers stop making throwaway vacuums when you keep buying them? For a vacuum that lasts and lasts, call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and try an 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the phenylketonuric, though. Mm. It sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
that fish and humans can coexist peacefully, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. We may not be joined by Camila Mejia. Let me explain to you the context of this. You know who he is. I'd assume you do. He's, I guess he's 30 years old now. Back on May 21st, 2004, he was 28. Sergeant Camila Mejia was sentenced to a year in prison for refusing to return to fight in Iraq. He sent, prior to the prison sentence, he spent 6 months in combat in Iraq, came back to the States for a two-week furlough, and while he was here, he started reflecting on what he was doing there, what his unit was doing, what the U.S. military was doing there, including the abuse of prisoners that he had witnessed, the killing of civilians, children, non-combatants. He concluded that the war was illegal and immoral, and he decided he would not return. He turned himself into the U.S. military. He didn't run. He just said, I'm not going back, and he filed for conscientious objector status. Well, the U.S. military responded by charging him with desertion and sentencing him to a year in prison. He was released February 15th, just passed. He had a statement upon his release. Camila Mejia said, I want to thank all the people and all the organizations who have supported my family and me throughout this most difficult time in our lives. I'm now free from prison, but it was because of all of you that I remained a free man during my incarceration. I was not able to read all the mail that was sent, in part because prison rules did not allow it, in part because I received thousands upon thousands of letters from all over the world. In time, I will read all of them, and I will answer as many as I can. From the bottom of my heart and on behalf of my family, my attorneys, myself, thank you all. He went on to say, at the present moment, there aren't any specific plans for the near future other than to spend time with my family, but I certainly want to continue to lend my voice to the movement for peace and justice of which I feel privileged to be a part. In time, I will share my experiences with you. Please check my website to stay updated for any events for the future. Thank you again for your support. God bless you all. Now, let me digress and go backwards 76 years. It was on March 12, 1930, that Mohandas Gandhi began the Salt Satyagraha, which was a seemingly quixotic journey of nonviolent protest against empire. As David Howard wrote 2 days ago at Online Journal, where he is a contributing writer, the Salt Satyagraha was a march to the sea empowered by what Gandhi called the inner vision, his inner vision. He was joined by thousands of ordinary Indians. Gandhi walked 241 miles from Ahmedabad to Dandi. Now, at the time, the British held a monopoly on salt, and Gandhi knew that the proceeds of the salt tax helped finance the forces of empire at the expense of the masses in India. When he arrived at Dandi on the Arabian Sea, Gandhi picked up a grain of salt and spoke prophetic truth to arrogant power. He said, quote, with this, I am shaking the foundations of the British Empire, end quote. All right, now, you know what happened subsequent to the salt march. You know how India gained its independence, and then immediately the Muslims and the Hindus got into sectarian violence, and Gandhi was assassinated by a Hindu. On March 12th of this year, 76 years later, as David Howard writes at Online Journal, as the world suffers the intended and unintended consequences of a hideous war of aggression against Iraq, Latino conscientious objectors and parents of fallen soldiers began their own two-week march of nonviolent protest. Like Gandhi in India, they will walk 241 miles between Tijuana and on the Mexican border and San Francisco. The leaders of the march are Fernando Suarez del Solar, whose Marine Corps son was among the first U.S. soldiers to die in the Iraq War, Pablo Paredes, the Navy seaman who was court-martialed for refusing to board an Iraqi-bound ship, Camilo Mejia, who chose military prison over redeployment in Iraq, and Aiden Delgado, who was granted conscientious objector status while stationed at Abu Ghraib prison.
So Camilo Mejia was scheduled to call us tonight and from the march, and we have tried his cell phone.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
All right, thanks. Thanks for the music there. Listen, we're having some problems here with our equipment, which we're just trying to struggle through. Sorry about the quick break there, but things fall apart. The center does not hold. Yada yada yada. Just a couple more things about Camilo Mejia, and I'll tell you what I want to do tonight too. By the way, we didn't even mention this. We're going to be off all next week. Peter Werby will be filling in for me. We have some things that have to be taken care of, so we're going to be gone for all of next week. And my good friend from Detroit, Peter Werby, will be filling in. So what I'd like to do tonight is open up the phone lines, starting right after the break at the top of the hour. The phone number here is 866-303-2270. And there have been so much going on, so many things happening. And because of the schedule we've been on and my propensity to just blab, we haven't been taking a lot of calls lately, and I want to correct that tonight. So the break at the top of the hour, when we come back, we want to take as many calls. And, you know, whatever you've got to bring up, because so much happened this week, just bring it on, so to speak. The phone number here is 866-303-2270. Now, just a little bit more. Apparently, we're not going to hear from Camilo Mejia this evening because of where he is. We don't know where he is. He's on the road somewhere between Southern California and the Mexican border and San Francisco. But the thing that I found interesting about Sergeant Camilo Mejia, he's the son of a Nicaraguan musician. He is the Mejia's father is Carlos Mejia Godoy, Nicaragua's most famous singer-songwriter. It was Carlos Godoy who participated as a cultural ambassador in the Sandinista Revolution that overthrew the Somoza dictatorship in 1979. And it was Mejia's father who wrote the Sandinista hymn. Camilo's uncle, Luis Enrique Mejia Godoy, also is an internationally acclaimed singer and songwriter. Mejia is a dual citizen of Nicaragua and Costa Rica. Costa Rica is his mother's birthplace. He settled in Miami in the early 90s, and like about 40,000 American soldiers, he's not a U.S. citizen, but he is a permanent resident. One of his attorneys, back in 04, when right after he, I believe right after Mejia had been sentenced, said, the attorney said that his client deserted during a furlough in the U.S. after witnessing American soldiers kill a 10-year-old boy. And after being ordered to soften up prisoners for interrogation at Al-Assad Air Base near the Baghdad airport. The attorney said, quote, the fighting and killing of civilians and illegal interrogations were the primary reason that Camilo Mejia deserted. The killing of children. I really had looked forward to talking to Camilo Mejia. Maybe we can get him when this march is over, Kathy. If you were on the internet at all today, Reuters news agency had a photograph of the family that was blown to pieces by the U.S. military in Tikrit 2 days ago. The Reuters Wire Service article says 11 members of an Iraqi family were killed, U.S. raid on Wednesday. The U.S. military said two women and a child died. But the autopsies, a senior Iraqi police officer said autopsies were done on the bodies, which included five children. And the autopsies, you know, you either believe this stuff or you don't, but the autopsies, according to the Iraqi police, showed each had been shot in the head, including the children. Community leaders, according to Reuters news agency, said they were outraged at the killings and demanded an explanation from the U.S. military. And then television footage, I guess on Al Jazeera, showed the bodies in the Tikrit morgue, five children, two men, four women. Their wounds were not clear, though one infant had a gaping head wound.
And it goes on and on. You probably saw this today. Somebody sent this to me. Thanks. Oh, God. We talk about this all the time. I guess it's very difficult for me anyway, and I'm sure for you, to talk about what we, the United States, are doing, to children in Iraq, murdering them. We're murdering children. We're living. I'm not talking about fetuses. I'm not talking about embryos. I'm not talking about the result of sexual intercourse inside a woman's womb. I'm talking about 5-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 9-year-olds, little boys and little girls who, when you look at the pictures of the living children in Iraq, you have to admit, don't you, they're beautiful children. All children are beautiful, of course. But these little Iraqi children who, with their dark eyes and their dark hair and the wide-eyed look on their face. I don't know. How does a 5-year-old, I guess we would have to talk to people who had been in war zones when they were children. How does a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old deal with bombs and death and their mother being blown into a million pieces? How do the parents deal with it? I mean, for no other reason than that. Shouldn't every American soldier say, no, I can't do this. I really can't do this. I really can't do this. And come home? Shouldn't our civilian leadership that dictates where the military goes, shouldn't that civilian leadership at this point, since it's all been revealed to be nothing but a tissue paper thin, a series of lies to get us there? We're murdering people. This is not war. This is not a war. This is not a war. This is a murder trip. This is murder. God, how can we, you and me, is it getting harder for you to if you're a man, to stand in front of the mirror like I do in the morning and shave? You know, you have to look at yourself there for about 7-8 minutes, right? If you're a woman and whatever you do in front of the mirror, and is it getting harder? You stand there and put on your makeup, whatever the hell you do in front of it, if you're an American. You know, in that moment, we all have a moment during the day, right? When we're grooming ourselves, we stand in front of a mirror. Dude, you think like I do? Now, I realize I'm immersed in this this stuff because it's what I do for a living. But you're immersed in it, too. You come to this program, and I'm sure you read stuff, and you look at the photos. But what do you think when you look at yourself in the mirror? I don't know. I'm becoming numb. Are you? I mean, the outrage is still inside me, but how much outrage can you maintain 24/7 before eventually you become numb? You just say, Jesus Christ, I can't. You know, I can't think about this anymore. I just can't. And in doing that, we close off a part of our humanity, don't we? It becomes just so gangrenous, you know, just so diseased. Murdering children? And I can't get away, I can't get away from it. Kathy and I talk a lot about, what we talk about in this program and how extreme I get and whether or not we should dial it back and what to talk about. And I admit, we were talking about this this afternoon, this evening, that the things we talk about, Kathy said, it's difficult, isn't it, to talk about children being blown into red mist? And, yeah, it really is. And I don't know, maybe it's becoming pornographic for me to talk like that. Or to offer links where you can go look at the pictures yourselves of this, and you find them yourselves anyway. Maybe there is, and I acknowledge there is such a thing as war pornography. Look at the soldiers in Iraq who were caught dealing in just that, war pornography. people blown to pieces. You know, to fetishize wounded and dead civilians in war. But this is not a war. We are not. There's nothing honorable. Do you agree with me on that? There is nothing honorable about what we're doing. There's no honor here. There's no honor for the United States. There's no honor for our troops. There's no honor for military leadership. There's no honor here in what we're doing in Iraq. None. Not a bit. Every single reason that the American public and the military were conned into doing this has turned out to be a lie. And the people who put the lies out there knew they were lies to begin with. This is vicious. If that's not a definition of immorality of the deepest, darkest sort, this is on a level with the Hitlerian attitudes towards the Jews and towards the Russians. This is just butchery. This is just murder. My God. And truth be told, it is getting more and more difficult for me. Maybe it is for you too. I get emails from so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Dear God, I wish I could answer them all. I just I can't. I just can't do it. But I read as many as I can, and the emotion that some of you folks put into these emails about you're feeling the same thing. You know, how much more of this can you take? I've had people make it very clear they're stopping listening to my program because they just can't deal with it anymore. Sorry, Malloy, got to move on. And my answer usually to that is, okay, take care. You know, adios. Au revoir. But we are in a bloody chapter in the history of the United States, and I just wonder sometimes how much of this we can continue to handle before the moral fabric of this country is just totally broken. Your phone calls when we come back. 866-303-2270 is the number. I'll see you in about 5 minutes.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Republicans are corrupt, dishonest, incompetent warmongers. Democrats are gutless, idealist, backstabbing crybabies. Or at least that's what the public believes. Most Americans disapprove of both parties more than they approve of them. Recent polls show just 34% of Americans praise Republicans, but only 32% of Americans like Democrats. In this popularity contest, both contestants are unpopular. Even President Bush, his approval ratings at an all-time low, fares better than both parties. Truth be told, there are major differences between Republicans and Democrats. They just don't seem very obvious. Yesterday, both parties voted to raise the country's debt limit. Both parties threw $50 billion more into the endless war in Iraq, and both parties claim to be the champions of fiscal responsibility. Thus, when The Economist magazine asked, "Are your priorities represented by your elected official?" only 17% said yes. For more, visit thenation.com. I'm Ari Berman for Air America Radio.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Who was the first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control? First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags? And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. Environmental regulators say a massive oil spill, the largest ever on the North Slope in Alaska, will lead to fines and maybe stricter pipeline regulations. A corroded pipeline with a hole the size of a pencil eraser let up to 267,000 gallons of crude oil leak out under the snow for at least 5 days. And it was not an automated system that discovered the spill, but an oil field worker who caught a whiff of the crude oil smell. BP has been defending its maintenance spending and inspection practices since advocates had blamed the company's cost-cutting practices. Environmentalists say BP knew there was a corrosion problem with the 30-year-old pipeline but failed to take precautions. Water is worth fighting for, even to the death, according to activists holding an alternate forum outside the World Water Summit at Mexico. That attitude may seem strange in developed countries where water flows at the touch of a faucet, but in the developing world, it's not nearly as accessible. Water wars are not an apocalyptic vision of the future. They're already happening. Today, about 10,000 protesters marched outside the convention center where the International Fourth World Water Forum is being held. The Environmental Protection Agency has now cleared the way to put limits on pollution from lawnmowers, jet skis, and other small gas engines. A study provoked by opposition from one lawmaker, the EPA says devices to reduce emissions do not pose a safety risk to consumers. Republican Senator Kit Bond's home state of Missouri has two factories owned by lawnmower engine maker Briggs & Stratton. Bond had delayed some new anti-smog rules by insisting on an investigation into whether catalytic converters come with a greater fire hazard. Now that study's been done, and the EPA says they may even reduce the fire risk. Without pollution controls, the agency says, engines under 50 horsepower would be responsible for nearly one-fifth of smog-making emissions from mobile sources by the year 2020. New legal problems for a former CIA contractor charged with beating an Afghan detainee who later died. David Pissarro released from jail in Raleigh, North Carolina today, only to be arrested again on charges of assaulting his former girlfriend. In Afghanistan, Pissarro was helping the U.S. military hunt terrorists and train armed forces. Authorities say the former Army Special Operations soldier kicked and beat an Afghan suspect for 2 days before he died. His attorney says the new accusations are unfounded. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Air America, the Mike Malloy program. Phone number here is 866-303-2270, as promised. Let's go right to your phone calls. Moses is calling from Miami. Moses, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Catholic, and I'm a very progressive Catholic. At least that's what I consider myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about how the leader of the march in New York has discriminated against that lady who happens to have been a lesbian, it made me very upset. And I thank you so much for pointing out the double standards that the church has. And it makes me very upset that the church in the 2004 election was more in support of Bush than it was for Kerry, knowing
yeah,
that...
Yeah, you know, the thing that really just freaked me out was during the last presidential election when there were cardinals, I think more than one, one or two got the publicity, but parish priests were saying the same thing, that a vote for Kerry would if not excommunicate the Catholic doing that, making that vote, but would at least constitute... more than a venial sin. That's an outrage. That's an absolute outrage. And simply because Kerry, who I believe is Catholic, isn't he?
He is Catholic. He is Catholic.
But he's pro privacy where it concerns a woman's right to privacy where it concerns a medical procedure. And because of that, because Kerry believes that the Constitution does grant an area of privacy. Around a family or a woman, the church leadership interfered with the election.
The church, the Christian doctrine promotes tolerance and love, the spreading of love and tolerance and forgiveness for those who have done wrong, and the chance and many chances for people to, in case that they have done something which is not agreed to, in which they may be able to accept.
I think that was Jesus, the message of Jesus, but I don't think it's the message of the Home Office in Rome any longer. I just don't. The church has become a political entity, not recently. I'm talking about over the past 300-400 years. It's become a political entity. It is more interested in power. Somebody sent me an email tonight telling me that in the Bible, especially the Christian part of the Bible, there are maybe three or four references to sex, and maybe 2,000 references to taking care of the poor. And yet, when you listen to some of these modern-day Protestant Christians, and even some Catholic Christians, they focus on the sex part, that gays are this and gays are that.
You know, it's really disgusting. You know, that they will focus on sex and abortion and gays, but they're not going to focus on how this president is responsible for the millions, and exactly, you hit it right on point, the millions of deaths of the Iraqi children, non-support of an enforcement of the law to molestation, to child molestation, and the fact that this president will not lead a national health care plan the fact that he doesn't lead the national health care plan has led to the death of hundreds and thousands of children in this country alone.
I know. It's
disgusting.
I don't understand, and I really don't, the issue of faith. People who possess faith, good for you. I have to respect it because it's an aspect of human development that I don't share, but I can see how it does grant to people in so many instances peace or a sense of fairness or justice or whatever. And when you say you are a Catholic and you share the Catholic faith, I have to respect you for your faith. I do not attack individual Catholics unless they make statements like this guy in New York who said that somebody should be denied a place in just a silly old St. Patrick's Day parade simply because that person
wants to share not just her Irish pride, but also the fact, yes, I'm Irish, I'm a woman, I'm a Catholic, and I happen to be lesbian, so what? So it's, I hear what you're saying. Moses, thanks a lot. I love your name. thanks a lot for checking in tonight, okay?
Okay, and thank you for taking my call again. Have a good night and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Yeah, faith to me is I don't know. It's just something that it's a currency that I don't use. Bob is calling from West Virginia. Is this the Bob we were trying to connect with the other night and just couldn't get through to?
You got it. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Bob. I'm sorry for all the confusion the other night.
Hey, no problem, man. Hey, I'll tell you what, okay? I have a couple serious issues. And just for that last caller, I'd like to add that Bush bought the evangelical vote with the faith-based initiatives. Mm-hmm. Also, they have some type of deal. The lobby is too strong with the Republican Party. But anyways, would you agree that a coup d'etat took place successfully, of which Eisenhower warned about in his farewell speech, which culminated in the death of President Kennedy, and is being exploited by this administration? And do you think if the Democrats win the House back and possibly the presidency, I hear they have a low chance of getting the Senate, they will have the cojones to take on the military-industrial complex, which is a big part of this economy? And also, will they address free trade, which is destroying the middle class and causing the growth disparity in the income gaps?
Damn, Bob, I didn't take notes. Let me see here. That's quite a question.
Sorry about that. Well,
that's
right.
It's
I didn't know if you wanted me to be quick or
no,
what.
No, you've been on hold for 24 hours, so I guess. All right. I agree with your assessment of what Eisenhower warned against and were there. I also agree that a coup was effected in this country on December 12, 2000, which is the day that the Supreme Court, at least the five members of the Supreme Court who are members of the same ruling crime family that George W. Bush and his father belonged to, gave the election to George W. Bush when he did not win it. And I also agree with you that... what was the rest of the question? I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, it's not only that, okay?
Yeah.
The coup d'etat that Eisenhower warned about has been in effect since Kennedy's assassination, because, as you know, he was not going to go in NAM. Therefore, Lyndon Johnson, of course, somehow was involved. Kennedy gets assassinated. We go in NAM. We have been at continual war ever since, both Democrats and Republicans. Continual war.
Yeah, well, you're right.
Now, will the Democrats stand up and address this issue?
No.
And also, do you think they will even touch free trade? Because
No. Let me tell you, so-called free trade, which is not, which is a misnomer completely. The NAFTA and the GATT and the globalization and all this stuff is going to lead to massive disruptions in economies and in countries because it can't work. Capitalism is the worst, absolutely the worst form economic system.
I agree totally, Mike.
Well, there's more to what I was going to say. Where it concerns families, where it concerns nations, because capitalism destroys families utterly and irrevocably and completely. It also shreds nations. It divides societies into haves and have-nots. It instills greed and avarice and lust. Capitalism is a horrendous, horrendous economic system. But it's also monstrous and massive, and practically every single government on the planet right now that has any power or influence over the lives of billions uses some form of capitalism, most of it predatory, most of it unchecked. So will the Democrats do anything to stop that? They can't. Will the Democrats do anything to stop Bush? They won't.
May
it's
I interject?
That simple. Yeah, go ahead, quickly.
Okay. Well, we have the leftist revolution going on in South America.
Right.
North Korea, Bush turned his back on. China we are in debt to. Communists, of course. Leftist revolution.
Well, but China, China's communism is a blend, kind of a hybrid, whorish blend of state control and capitalism. So I wouldn't call them communists. Hey, listen, we got a break here. Bob, I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate what you had to say. You made some good points. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers. Business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
For a Piance Brian's future, it's Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour. All right, back to your phone calls here in just a second. Our friend Reg over at TV News Live sent this to me. This is an excerpt from an article by Father Andrew Greeley. It was in the Chicago Sun-Times a few days ago, and it's an apt reading on St. Patrick's Day. Just a little bit of it here. The article is titled, Evil of War Brings Unending Pain. And Father Greeley writes, every time I see a picture of an American killed in Iraq, I wince. I think of the agony that the death will cause, shattering, rending, paralyzing pain and the stress and the strain it will introduce into family relationships. I wonder if the family will ever be free from the suffering. In most cases, it probably will. Mourning will replace grief, more or less.
In some families, the trauma will be too much. The guilt and anger and magical thinking will persist, and blaming will increase. Purgatory now, self-created purgatory. The rationalization that he or she died defending American freedom, given bravely to the privacy violating, TV journalists sounds hollow and will seem more hollow as years go on. And what of the Iraqi lives? The men and women and children killed so casually by their own kind and even by Americans. On a day when 50 Iraqis are killed but no Americans, we tend to breathe a sigh of relief. Iraqi grief is not the same as American grief. The Muslim, quote, ragheads, end quote, have brought the disaster on themselves. Besides, their noisy lamentations are not in good taste. Yet if we believe in American religion, we must mourn with them, too, as best we can. Why 2,200 Americans dead? Reasons keep changing. Iraqis were probably involved in the September 11th attack. They possessed huge stores of weapons of mass destruction. We had to get rid of Saddam Hussein. We have to keep our promise to the Iraqi people. We must keep faith with those Americans who have already died. We must establish democracy in the Middle East. Some Americans still believe these arguments. Many do not. You cannot fool all the people all the time. The real reasons for this war are too harsh to be fully accepted. The Vice President wanted to tighten up on civil liberties. The Secretary of Defense wanted to wage a new kind of war. The neoconservative memo writers wanted to take pressure off of Israel. Our president, quote, quote, wanted to reap the glory of being a wartime president. The majority of Congress wanted to be seen as patriotic Americans. Many, perhaps most, Americans wanted revenge for the World Trade Center attack. Many, perhaps most, Americans believe that the war in Iraq was part of the war on terrorism. The only consolation the grief-stricken families can fall back on is that their lost love died doing his or her duty. This is certainly the truth, and it is certainly an admirable way to die. Some of the families already want to know why a death at the hands of a roadside bomber or a suicide bomber was a necessary duty. One can only pray that God brings them peace. As for those who caused this war, how can they sleep at night? Father Andrew Greeley wrote that. Back to your phone calls, please. Doug is calling from Mesa, Arizona. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Mike? Yeah, the only way you can hear you now is on the internet. I know I don't know if all your listeners heard that Fair America Phoenix went off the air, and I do want to thank you and some of the local folks around the country have mentioned to help save Air America Phoenix. And
yeah, they're working on it. They're working on it, and I think there may be some good news for Air America's audience in Phoenix.
So, well, yeah, Jeff Ferris, which was one of the local hosts on Air America Phoenix, he is at our District 19 meeting, and it does sound promising, but they wouldn't make any sound promises yet.
Right, right.
So, yeah, and keep up the good work. I just wish some people, everybody else was as angry as you get sometimes. But, you know, other than that, I really like the show.
Okay, thanks, Doug. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Sherry is calling from Washington State. Sherry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Sherry.
I don't know who said it, but a saying that I've heard is, a measure of a nation is in how it treats its children.
Yeah.
And I'm still ruminating on that gal that called you last night, Cassie.
Cassie, uh-huh.
Yeah, and I've got some questions about that situation, particularly why the need for secrecy. She said that her brother couldn't allow her to go public with this.
Well, no, her brother didn't want her to mention the town that she lived in. I think it's obvious he would be put under a tremendous pressure by his chain of command. You know what? I'm sure the argument would have been, why are you taking this public? You joined the reserve or the National Guard. I think it was National Guard. You knew what you were doing, and now that you get called up, you're going to whine and go on the air. Now, I think the reason was legit. Can you hold on a second?
Sure.
All right, Sherry, because we have to take a break here, then we'll come back and pick up the conversation. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Have you experienced a random act of kindness? Someone you haven't seen for years suddenly come back into your life? Do you know a positive story that inspired or motivated you? Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com. For years, Aleve has been devoted to providing good news for people with arthritis pain. Now, Aleve invites you to share your good news at AleveGoodNews.com.
Use is directed for minor arthritis pain.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 26 before the hour. Trish, we're coming back to Sherry in just a second, but Trish in Memphis sent me an email last hour, and I forgot to mention it. excuse me. Mid-South Peace and Justice Center is planning a peace action on Sunday, March 19th, in Memphis. And this is in conjunction with the 3-year so-called anniversary since the shock and awe occupation of Iraq began. There are anti-war marches planned throughout the United States and around the world on Sunday, March 19th. And these marches, of course, you know what they're there, what they are, symbolic of the resistance against more death. 2,300 U.S. soldiers have been killed, 17,000 injured, 100,000 Iraqi civilians have died. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, in Memphis, you can go to midsouthpeace.org and get the information. Midsouthpeace.org. And there are all sorts of peace and justice websites that you can check to find out about whatever action might be planned in your city. Okay? I think it's important. We're going to be in Tampa on the 19th, and I think that there will probably be demonstrations there that we can participate in. Please do something if you can, all right, with your body. Take yourself out there. All right, back to Sherry. All right, Sherry. Yeah, now, I hope that answered it for you.
Well, I just don't see how the military can have so much control over this family's life to the point where their civil liberties are being overridden by his military obligations. Shouldn't the family come first? I mean, after all, aren't these the family values people?
Well, that's what you and I would think. But you have to understand, once you take the oath in the military, your rights as a civilian end. The universal code of military justice takes over, and the United States Constitution disappears. Now,
does that apply to the reserves as well?
Oh, sure. Once you take the oath, you're in. You're in, and especially when you're called up or ordered up for active duty. That's it. You don't have the kind, you see, you still have constitutional rights, but they are mitigated by your oath in joining the military. So Cassie's older brother does not have the protections that, say, you and I would have. If he violates a direct order, you know, if somebody tells you to get on the curb, a cop says, get out of the street and get on the curb, and you resist and they take you to court, or arrest you and take you to court, you have a chance to fight back, and you may wind up suing the city and winning a lawsuit because of some froggy-ass cop who decided to get punk with you.
Right.
In the military, if you are issued an order and you disobey the order, oh, my God. You know, the only thing that is irrevocable in the military is chain of command. And you cannot violate a direct order unless, it's an unlawful order. But an order to shut up and sit down and get ready to deploy to Iraq is not an unlawful order.
Is there any way that he can bypass that by becoming a conscientious objector if he so chooses?
You can apply for CO status, but the way those applicants are treated these days is to charge them with some sort of breach of their contract as a reservist or as a national a guardsman or woman. Plus, you can be held up to real, not scrutiny, but insults and all sorts of debasing attitudes simply because, you know, because the argument would be, if you're such a conscientious objector, why did you join up to begin with? And the answer to that is, well, you know, I never figured I'd be sent to a war zone. I don't mind
how
being...
How about I have a sister to take care of, and there's no other legal guardian of her, and she's at a very sensitive age?
Doesn't matter. They'll just say, listen, sorry about that, soldier.
So now, she's left to fend for herself, and that's
sure. There are avenues that can be explored, and I hope these two young kids, they're both kids, as far as I'm concerned. I hope that they explore those avenues. I forwarded to Cassie probably 25 emails that came to me with suggestions, most of which got down to contacting their local congressman or congresswoman or state senator. And pleading the case based on hardship. You know, this young girl has
I mean, Jesus, you know, with no father and her mother in jail and the only one taking care of her brother, and then the state wants to step in and say, well, we'll put you in foster care. It's an outrage. It's just a damn outrage.
Yeah, I couldn't stop thinking about that last night.
Well, Bush needs, or Rumsfeld, or these murderers need his body as a killing machine. They don't care about Cassie.
No.
You know, and there are probably thousands of stories like hers out there. Cassie is just the one who called in.
Yeah.
How many other cases?
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to be a kid. What about a young mother?
Yeah.
You know, what about a woman who is married to a guy who may have joined the National Guard in order to supplement income because Bush has destroyed the economy, and all of a sudden, you know, his hope that if he got called up to active duty, it would be stateside to do what the National Guard has traditionally done in the past 20 years. But no, these rapacious, murderous thugs in D.C. say, come on, boy, you're going to Iraq. And the wife and the baby are, you know, they don't matter. They don't matter.
They're just riding roughshod over, I want to give away a bumper sticker idea.
Okay.
I could make money on it, but I just want to set it out there. It's, if you love America, take it back.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right. Yeah. Thanks for checking in, Sherry. I appreciate your call. Come on, folks, with the language, all right? Okay. Nothing went over the air. Nothing ever will because of the adroit handling of everything by our production crew in New York. But people on hold hear the language and think that it's permissible. It is not. So you can't use that kind of language. Thank you. Now, I have a challenge here. If some yellow ribbon SUV driving right winger would like to call the program, I know you won't, but if you'd like to and defend this situation, this call up of this 21, what did she say? What did Cassie say last night, Kathy, that her brother was 20, 21, about to turn 21, and 14-year-old girl, he is her sole support. If any of you right-wingers want to defend this, of course, the only caveat, I would suggest that you be a right-winger who has a member of your family in the military. Oops! Uh-oh! Ah! See? Yeah! But if you are a war lover and a Bush lover and a psychopathic freak, well, you don't have to be a psychopathic freak. Just whenever I think of Bush, I think of that. But if you're conservative or Republican or right winger and you love war, as long as somebody else's kids are doing it, and can defend what is happening to these young kids, sure, we'd love to hear from you. I don't mean we'd love to hear from you. Actually, you'll turn my stomach, but it might be interesting for the 30 seconds that you guys are usually on the line. Ah, Jesus. Bill is calling from Phoenix. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Calling hey, Bill.
I'm calling from the desert, man. They took away our oasis, but we're going to get it back.
Okay.
All right. The question was how it makes me feel. So the question is how it makes me feel as a man. If I think about how I feel as a man, I have to think about what my hopes were as a boy, as a young man. You know, and I read that book that you were reading, that you're going to read, and I said, no, this is wrong. This could never happen. And then I watched it happen. Funny thing is, I watched it happen in the same breath. I watched the Berlin Wall fall down. A miracle of miracles by my recollections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, no matter what happened, Mike, we always move forward. What happened?
Well, what happened was people who literally hate this country, hate our Constitution, hate Americans, hate themselves, got into a position of power.
I think when we beat them back after World War II, I think what we did wrong was we let them go with their money and their great wealth, their great, great, great wealth and power. And they just reared up on this continent this time. Like I said, it's all contrived. It's also the night we went off the air, I told you. It's contrived. You agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Bill. I appreciate you checking in. I assume what Bill meant was the people that are destroying America. I believe with all my heart and soul. I really do. I'm not. This is not gratuitous talk radio host nonsense. I really do believe that Donald Rumsfeld hates this country, just hates it on some fundamental level. and wants to change it into something dark and evil that is full of mind control and thought control and destruction of civil liberties. I think Donald Rumsfeld is a murderous son of a bitch who hates America from the bottom of his heart. He hates the military. I think he gets some kind of perverse pleasure in reading daily casualty reports. It doesn't make any difference who it is, but especially if Americans are dying, I believe this evil son of a bitch loves it. I do. I do. I do believe that. Dick Cheney, I think, is just epitomizes a mass murderer. Epitomizes it. Every time he reads casual reports about American soldiers or Iraqi civilians or whomever, I think Dick Cheney probably gets a feeling that is remotely resembles what you and I would call a sexual arousal. I think he is an evil, sick son of a bitch. I really do. These are the people that control this country.
Heck, look at what they do to just their own friends. Cheney's trying to kill his buddy.
That's very true. Well, I have nothing to say. My lips are sealed. Say something once. Why say it again? Psycho killer. Just get dead.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We've been talking this week and last and the week before about these internment camps that Department of Homeland Security is paying a lot of money to Halliburton to refurbish. This was at Daily Coast today. Internment of undocumented immigrants to begin. That's the headline. And it's from today. It says Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff announced that Department of Homeland Security would be opening detention facilities in the next few weeks to house thousands of Chinese immigrants who have been denied immigration to the United States, yet were refused readmission by the Chinese government. Currently, there are an estimated 39,000 undocumented immigrants caught in this diplomatic limbo. But if the more punitive immigration legislation passed on by the House in December and now being debated in the Senate was to become a law, perhaps millions more would join them. Chinese? Who knew? So I guess that what Chertoff is saying is that, yeah, the camps are moving right ahead, and the Chinese, we have 39,000 undocumented immigrant Chinese that we're going to put there. Jesus. It goes on here. This is at Daily Coast. In an interview with the Associated Press, Chertoff said that China last year readmitted 800 people, but only made a small dent in what he described as a backlog of thousands illegally in the U.S. Chertoff said, quote, the math is pretty easy. At that rate, we wind up with increasing numbers of migrants who, if we're going to detain them, we're going to have to house at enormous expense. And he added, we can't be in the position any longer where we're paying the burden and bearing the burden for countries that won't cooperate with us and take their own citizens back, end quote. Anyway, Chertoff also said Homeland Security would open detention facilities in the next few weeks to house entire families of illegal immigrants who hope to bring their children along in order to avoid jail time. Chertoff said, quote, it'll be humane, but we're not going to let people get away with this, end quote. Jesus Christ, really? And, of course, Halliburton got the money, $385 million, almost half a billion dollars to set up these detention centers. So what do you think, Truth Seeker? Just for those pesky Chinese immigrants, huh? Oh, man. Here's the headline from March 21st, 1933, a camp for political prisoners in the Dachau area. In a statement to the press, Himmler, Munich's chief of police, announced, quote, on Wednesday, the first concentration camp will be open near Dachau. It has a capacity of 5,000 people. Here, all communists so far as necessary, Reichsbanner and Marxist officials who endanger the security of the state will be assembled. In the long run, if government administration is not to be very burdened, it is not possible to allow individual communist officials to remain in court custody. On the other hand, it is also not possible to allow these officials their freedom again. Each time we have attempted this, the result was that they again tried to agitate and organize. We have taken these measures without concern for each pedantic objection encountered, in the conviction that we act to calm the concerns of the nation's people and in accordance with their aims. End quote. Himmler gave assurance that in each individual case, preventive custody will not be maintained longer than necessary. It is obvious, however, that the astonishingly large quantity of material evidence seized will take a long time to be examined. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, I know, it is silly and gratuitous to make references to the Nazi regime. Yeah. Okay. Nicole is calling from Atlanta. Nicole, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Hey, doing fine. How are you, Nicole?
You know, I listened last night to the 14-year-old, and I was numb. I was thinking about when you were talking earlier, and I think I really was numb until I heard her talk, and that just, I thought about her all day, and I just want to tell her she's listening, that I'm praying for her in her situation, and I hope it works out for the best, and it just touched me deeply.
I hear
being a black woman in America, living in Atlanta, the South, born and raised here, being tainted by racism, I look at things, I think differently just because of who I am and what I know and what I've been brought up with and what I've experienced. And that just broke the color line for me last night, that we all have the deepest wants for ourselves and our family. Everybody wants to be validated. Everybody wants to live a good life and be happy and have family. Mm-hmm. And I just thought of just basically people on lower income suffering with this war, and the people who we've supposedly voted, whatever that word means now in America, voted in, are making these laws or doing these things that are hurting the least of us. And I just think it's really sad. You know, I don't know if any of them are going through being a 14-year-old or having a 14-year-old in their family who's being raised by a brother who's probably trying to do his best with the situation, whose parents aren't available, you know, because of whatever. And, you know, we can't even judge that situation because I don't know what happened, you know what I mean? But the situation is what it is, and he's trying to do his best. And then, oh, wait a minute, they tried to kill my daddy, so you got to go over. You know, that's crazy.
Sure. Oh, no, I know what you mean.
Ridiculous. And I just thought about her all day, and that kind of broke my numbness. And it's just, you know, they're fighting for something that has nothing to do with us. It's not our business.
I know.
You're mad at him. Why don't y'all get in the ring and fight? And
that's what
out?
I'm talking about.
Whoever lives is the winner. It's just crazy. I just want her to know that. I hope she's listening, somebody who knows, and just let her know that she broke the color line for me last night.
Well, I'm glad you called in, Nicole. That's if Cassie's listening tonight, that's a pretty profound statement. Thanks, Nicole. I appreciate you tuning in. All right. Take care. We have a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Air America Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. The U.S. military in Iraq is calling its joint assault with Iraq security forces in Samarra a preview of the next phase of the war. The campaign is being called the largest air assault launched since the opening days of the war. The military excluded news media video coverage of the campaign, opting to release Pentagon-produced video only. The 1,500 U.S. and Iraqi troops are sweeping a 100-square-mile area for insurgents. So far, they say 30 have been detained, and one American soldier has been killed. Meanwhile, back in Baghdad, three more bodies were dumped on the streets, bringing the week's toll to more than 100 corpses dumped in the capital. Back in the USA, there's mixed reaction to the U.S. operation against Iraqi insurgents on the third anniversary of the war. Spencer Rain reports.
We think they're doing the right thing, then we have to support them.
And this man sees parallels to Vietnam.
We're trying to divide and conquer a country, basically stabilize it.
Hoping the death toll and the timeline of this war are far shorter. Spencer Rain, Hoboken, New Jersey.
Emergency workers in Kauai continue to search for five people still missing since Tuesday's dam collapse on the Hawaiian island. Other crews are keeping a close watch on other dams on the island as heavy rains continued to fall for a fourth straight day. The flooding and mudslides have blocked many roads on the island, and the continued rains threaten more slides. At least two people are known dead in the flooding this week. The FDA says it has received two more reports of deaths among women who had taken RU486. That's the pill intended to abort a pregnancy within the first 7 weeks. Doctors are being reminded to closely monitor patients using RU486 for any onset of abdominal pain, fever, or nausea. The poor eastern Caribbean island of Antigua is defending its turn to become a source of internet gambling sites as a way to bring new jobs for the island and offset the volatile tourism industry. Island leaders are angry that the Bush administration wants to draft legislation in Congress to ban electronic wagering across state lines that would also impact offshore gambling sites. Antigua says the effort would violate World Trade Organization rules and would reflect U.S. discrimination against foreign governments. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
7 past the hour. Welcome back. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Once again, program note, we being Kathy and I, will be off all next week. Peter Werby will be filling in on this program Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And we'll be back the following Monday. Email here from Les. Les writes, some of us didn't hear the show last night. Could you recap the call you're talking about so we can better understand what you're talking about? Thanks. That's the Cassie call. The situation was a 14-year-old girl who called in from North Carolina whose brother is 20 years old, about 21, is in the reserves and is being called up to active duty and going to be sent to Iraq. This 14-year-old girl... Her sole provider is her brother. The two live together. The brother, who is now being ordered to Iraq, is takes care of Cassie. Cassie's in high school in North Carolina. Her mother happens to be in jail on a drug charge. Her father is just not around, not on the scene. So Cassie and her older brother have been making it together as a family, what's left of their family. And Cassie called in because she's freaked out. The state or the county where she lives has suggested that they're going to put her in foster care while her brother goes and fights Bush's filthy, lying, destructive, degenerate war. And Cassie's upset about that because she wants to stay in her school, stay with her friends. She is trying to get, maybe the parents of one of her friends to assume temporary custody while her brother's in the military. So when Cassie called in last night, we just talked about it, and then there were just quite a goodly number of emails that came in with suggestions about what this young woman could do. So that's what it's about. Now, the entire call can be heard online at airamericaradio.com, go to the bottom of the page where the audio highlights are listed and find my program, and the Cassie is there from last night. So if you want to hear the entire conversation again, go to airamericaradio.com, go to the bottom of that page where it says audio highlights, and you can find the actual call. Okay, back to your phone calls. Sandy is calling from Connecticut. Sandy, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Sandy.
Nice job to open the show there with the Irish jokes.
Right.
If the day you decide where you can't take it anymore, maybe you can just go do stand-up.
I can go be a comedian, yeah. Okay.
Kathy's very lucky to have your sense of humor around, and I'm sure she's... You have her laughing all day long, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're just a barrel of monkeys. Uh-huh.
Lucky Molly.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Molly. Molly makes her happy and makes her laugh. I'm kind of a strain. But not all the time, but yeah. But just enough that every once in a while, Kathy will look at me and say, now I think I made the right decision with this guy.
Yeah.
But that's true in any marriage, you know.
Oh, yeah. Do you ever sleep?
No.
Yeah.
Neither one of us do. We have a 20-month-old kid.
I don't know how to do it.
I don't either. We're both right on the verge of a complete physical and mental breakdown.
I know how you feel. Oh, man. Now, it was interesting you were talking about the detention centers before, because it kind of follows along with the what I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
It was Phil Markowitz, the fellow that you interviewed over the last 3 weeks.
Right.
Great interviews, all of them. And I know that at the end you were just dying to ask the question, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I Because when I look at it, I kind of see things the way you do, the way things are sliding downhill fast with the detention centers and the parallel.
Well, let me clarify for people who might not know what you and I are talking about right now. First of all, before I put Philip Markowitz on the program, we started 3 weeks ago, and then we had him each subsequent Thursday night. He and I had a discussion about a 45-minute. I called him at his home in Florida, and we talked about what we were going to talk about, and just kind of a get to know you a little bit kind of conversation. And I asked him at the time if he felt that the United States was drifting towards fascism, and his answer was no. And this was in the conversation between him and me off the air.
Okay.
And we talked about that for a while, and it became apparent to me that that Philip Markowitz's definition of fascism is different from, say, yours and mine.
Right.
And I have tried in the past frequently to use the term American fascism. I don't think there will ever be, again, anything like Nazi fascism.
Right.
And it became clear to me in talking with Mr. Markowitz that his reference was to Nazism, and my reference was to American fascism.
Right.
And there is a difference. The fascism that I see occurring in this country is more like the fascism that Mussolini was involved with, or Franco was involved with in Italy and Spain, respectively.
Yeah.
The Italians' fascism predated Germany's by, what, I don't know, 15 years. And the famous or infamous line that at least Mussolini's fascism got the trains running on time in Italy.
Right.
There were no death camps in Italy, as far as I'm aware of. There was no massive persecution. Yeah, the Jews took it in the chops. The Jews always take it in the chops. But there were no death camps. There were no roundups of people that anywhere came close to what was going on in Germany. The German Nazis were insane. I mean, literally and with no doubt, completely mad.
Yeah, but those Bush and Cheney.
Well, I think Cheney and Rumsfeld are equally mad. I think those two would have fit very easily into the German high command.
Yeah.
Bush is a clown. He's an evil clown.
Right.
But he is a clown. He's the stupidest man I've ever seen in a position of any sort of power. This guy would not qualify to sit on the Atlanta City Council, much less be president of the United States. He couldn't get elected down here because he's such an ass.
Yeah.
But an ass clown, I guess, is the term. But anyway, what Markowitz, so when I asked Markowitz, Mr. Markowitz, last night, whether he thought, I knew what his answer was going to be, and it wasn't a shock for him to say no. But again, I think what Markowitz talks about, when he talks about fascism, he came through the horror that was Nazism. And it was fascism, but it was a brand of fascism that I guess we hope will never occur again, although it has occurred again, not on the scale that occurred in Germany. But it has occurred. It's occurred. Pol Pot, by any definition, was a fascist in Cambodia. The death squads that were unleashed in Central America by John Negroponte, that's an example of fascism. What's his name? Pinochet in Chile after the assassination of Salvador Allende, that was fascism. And that's the kind of fascism I make reference to. And I think fascism is coming to the United States, where corporations make the decisions and then buy off Congress, which is exactly what has happened here, and Congress responds to the will of the corporations, not the will of the people.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, so my definition of fascism and Philip Markowitz's definition of Nazism are two different things, and I think that's the question he was answering.
Yeah.
Because if you listen last night, would I put a finer point on it, I think he agreed, okay, yes, there are things happening in the United States that...
Right.
That the American people are certainly not happy with, and but you see the point there, Sandy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Well, hopefully it'll never get to that here.
I hope. I really do. We'll see. We'll
okay.
see what happens.
Thanks
Sandy,
a lot,
thank.
Mike, and,
all right. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Ah, Lord have mercy. There was, you know, and I don't mean to imply there was some kind of trickery involved because Mr. Markowitz and I had a conversation for 45 minutes before he ever came on the air. But I knew what his answer would be, that fascism as he knew it, the horror that he went through, so far, no, he doesn't see that on the... And I see that as a good thing. I think the fascism that is developing in this country, though, is genuine fascism. It's just not the murderous Nazism, not yet, that Mr. Markowitz experienced. We'll be right back. This is Air America.
Listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought: change the air you breathe. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
Flying Monkey Right Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
The most bands, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day. From the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay.
It's 22 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Amir is calling from Portland, Oregon. Amir, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
First time caller, long time listener, man.
Well, welcome aboard.
Well, I'm a college student. I come from like a Middle Eastern background, and I hear firsthand what happens all the time. I have family in Iraq, and it's just disgusting. So I like hearing this progressive talk, and I like real people, you know, on there. So, gotta let you know I appreciate you a lot, man.
Thank you.
I was calling to let you know that there's a protest downtown Portland. It's going to be on the 18th at Waterfront Park. I don't have the website, but it's going to be a huge anti-war protest. And
now that's tomorrow.
No, the 18th. Oh, wait. It's Sunday.
Yeah, I think you mean the 19th.
Yeah, the 19th, excuse me.
Right, because there are demonstrations being coordinated and planned around the globe, and I'm sure Portland is one city that's going to have a good turnout of people who are sick of this murder, who are sick of the murderers who now run this country.
Absolutely.
I guess there's information out on the street or whatever for people to find out where it's going to form up and what the deal is in Portland, correct?
What's that? I'm sorry.
I'm sure that there's information out there for people who live in Portland.
I've been disseminating a lot of the information via email on the internet with some friends. Got my whole family involved. We're all going to head down there. And I just want, you know, people to go down there and protest that they're sick of, you know, murderous Bush. It's horrible. Like, the other day I was listening to the radio, and I heard about their Negroponte death squad, you know, killing the family of Iraqis. And I couldn't listen to the radio anymore. It just disgusts me so bad. And I think that more people need to be a lot more aware of what's happening on the world. And think of it as your family, you know?
Sure.
Don't think of it as another country and other people. You got to think of it as, like, what if that was your family? Would you accept that? You know, and I think a lot of times people get detached from reality when they hear about it. They don't personalize it, which I think is a huge issue with, like, our society in general.
Well, that's precisely what we were talking about on this program, I think, Wednesday night, trying to imagine our own children or grandchildren wrapped up in blankets, lying there dead as a result of bullets put in their heads by an invading force, and how to deal with that. And I don't think anybody listening to the program that night was able to do that. I know I damn sure can't. I have grandchildren, but I also have a 20-month-old baby girl. And the mere thought of people coming through the roof of my home because they think there is an insurgent staying in my basement and killing my children and killing my wife and killing my father. And, you know, I mean, they would have to kill me because at that point I would start to take as many of them as I could. And end their lives. I would just end their lives. I don't care what I would have to do. If it's roadside bombs, I'm sorry. If it's blowing up the son or daughter of an American, if my family had just been wiped out, and my 10-year-old and my 3-year-old and my 2-year-old, what am I supposed to do? Listen to this son of a bitch in the White House say, well, you know, we're really sorry, but we have to bring freedom and democracy to Iraq. I would go mad, totally.
Yeah, and it's not even, you know, true freedom or democracy. A good friend of mine from Iraq, he said, you guys got rid of Saddam. He was a Shiite that suffered under Saddam Hussein, and half my family's Kurdish. And they sit there and they say, wow, you know, you guys got rid of Saddam Hussein, but look, you put somebody a lot worse in power. Like, Look what's happening, you know, and it disgusts me. And I really appreciate the fact that Air America's there. And I'm going to call your corporate offices because I want to help you guys get on, you know, television. Because I think a lot of Americans, what they see is what they believe. And
well, sure.
I think if you guys were to get on television, it would just blow some minds. And I think you guys would definitely have the resources to make it a very successful program.
Well, thanks, Amir. I'm glad you're tuning in, and good luck with the demonstration on Sunday. We're going to be gone next week. When we come back, maybe some people will be calling us or emailing us and let us know.
Do you check your emails often?
Oh, sure I do.
Because I did a PowerPoint presentation that you might be really interested in.
PowerPoint is a little hard for me to deal with on my little crappy-ass computer. just send me an email, okay?
Okay, thanks, right, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. You take care. Yeah, whatever your city is, even here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, I'm sure there will be the usual 8 or 9 people show up downtown on Sunday protesting this murderous war. That's usually about the best we can do here, sometimes 15 or 20. It's sad, but, this is the South. This is Georgia. We have more military bases in Georgia than I think any state in the Union. The state is run by white Republicans who let you know that they're both white and Republican and will kick your ass if you don't acknowledge that they're white and Republican. That's just the way it is. But maybe this Sunday will be different here in Atlanta. Who knows? All right, stick around. When we come back, some 1984, very short chapter tonight, chapter 14. It's only 2 pages. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hello, my name's Smokey and I'm a hardcore biker. I'm here to tell you that Geico... Hold on a sec. Is this the right music, bro?
Really?
Anyway, Geico covers most kinds of bikes, so you can get money-saving discounts whether you're a casual weekend rider or a hardcore biker like me. See, man, I'm not sure. This music don't make a lick of sense.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
More coffee, mister?
Yes, please. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Hot coffee all over you. Let me get some paper towels and some cold water. Are you all right?
Why, I'm just fine, young lady. It's just scalding coffee.
Mister, you must be gelling.
That's why I'm not yelling, even though there's considerable redness and swelling.
More gel, more gelling. New and improved Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles. More cushioning. Totally outrageous comfort. To start gelling like never before, see the doctor, Dr. Scholl's.
Waitress, how about some more coffee?
Hello, and welcome back to Ask the Orkin Man.
Hey, Orkin Man. I think termites are destroying my kid's wood swing set.
Oh, that's not good. What makes you think it's termites?
I don't know. The swings are lower.
But are you sure your kids aren't just taller?
Even the baby's got skin knees.
Oh.
Not my house could be next.
Could be. Those little foragers can travel over 100 feet.
Duh, it's only 30 to the house.
Don't worry. One of our experts can treat these and help prevent more in the future.
Thanks, Orkin Guy.
Man.
Hi, man.
For a free inspection, just call
1-800-ORKIN-MAN.
We'll be right back.
26 before the hour. We're all the way up to chapter 14 in George Orwell's 1984. This is a very quick chapter. This is where Winston Smith has his first extended contact with O'Brien. And this will be the last reading until Kathy and I come back Monday week. It had happened at last. The expected message had come. All his life, it seemed to him, he had been waiting for this to happen. He was walking down the long corridor at the ministry, and he was almost at the spot where Julia had slipped the note into his hand when he became aware that someone larger than himself was walking just behind him. The person, whoever it was, gave a small cough, evidently as a prelude to speaking. Winston stopped abruptly and turned. It was O'Brien. At last they were face to face, and it seemed that his only impulse was to run away. His heart bounded violently. He would have been incapable of speaking. O'Brien, however, had continued forward in the same movement, laying a friendly hand for a moment on Winston's arm, so that the two of them were walking side by side. He began speaking with the peculiar grave courtesy that differentiated him from the majority of inter-party members. "I had been hoping for an opportunity of talking to you," he said. "I was reading one of your Newspeak articles in the Times the other day. You take a scholarly interest in Newspeak, I believe." Winston had recovered part of his self-possession. "Hardly scholarly," he said. "I'm only an amateur. It's not my subject. I've never had anything to do with the actual construction of the language." "But you write it very elegantly," said O'Brien. "This is not only my own opinion. I was talking recently to a friend of yours who is certainly an expert. His name has slipped my memory for the moment." Again, Winston's heart stirred painfully. It was inconceivable that this was anything other than a reference to Sim. But Sim was not only dead, he was abolished, an unperson. Any identifiable reference to him would have been mortally dangerous. O'Brien's remark must obviously have been intended as a signal, a code word. By sharing a small act of thought crime, he had turned the two of them into accomplices. They had continued to stroll slowly down the corridor, but now O'Brien halted. With the curious, disarming friendliness that he always managed to put into the gesture, he resettled his spectacles on his nose, and then he went on. "What I had really intended to say was that in your article, I noticed you had used two words which have become obsolete. But they have only become so very recently. Have you seen the 10th edition of the Newspeak Dictionary?" "No," said Winston. I didn't think it had been issued yet. We're still using the 9th in the records department." "The 10th edition is not due to appear for some months, I believe. But a few advance copies have been circulated." "I have one myself," O'Brien said. "It might interest you to look at it, perhaps." Very much so," said Winston, immediately seeing where this tended. "Some of the new developments are most ingenious, the reduction in the number of verbs. That's the point that will appeal, I think. Let me see, shall I send a messenger to you with a dictionary? But I'm afraid I invariably forget anything of that kind. Perhaps you could pick it up at my flat at some time that suited you. Wait, let me give you my address." They were standing in front of a telescreen. Somewhat absent-mindedly, O'Brien felt two of his pockets and then produced a small leather-covered notebook and a gold link pencil. Immediately beneath the telescreen, in such a position that anyone who was watching at the other end of the instrument could read what he was writing, he scribbled an address, tore out the page, and handed it to Winston. "I'm usually home in the evenings," he said. "If not, my servant will give you the dictionary." He was gone, leaving Winston holding the scrap of paper, which this time there was no need to conceal. Nevertheless, he carefully memorized what was written on it, and some hours later dropped it into the memory hole along with a mass of other papers. They had been talking to one another for a couple of minutes at the most. There was only one meaning that the episode could possibly have. It had been contrived as a way of letting Winston know O'Brien's address. This was necessary because, except by direct inquiry, it was never possible to discover where anyone lived. There were no directories of any kind. If you ever want to see, this is where I can be found. What's what O'Brien had been saying to him. Perhaps there would even be a message concealed somewhere in the dictionary. But at any rate, one thing was certain. The conspiracy that he had dreamed of did exist, and he had reached the outer edges of it. He knew that sooner or later he would obey O'Brien's summons, perhaps tomorrow, perhaps after a long delay. He was not certain. What was happening was only the working out of a process that had started years ago. The first step had been a secret, involuntary thought. The second had been the opening of the diary. He had moved from thoughts to words, and now from words to actions. The last step was something that would happen in the ministry of love. He had accepted it. The end was contained in the beginning, but it was frightening. Or more exactly, it was like a foretaste of death, like being a little less alive. Even while he was speaking to O'Brien, when the meaning of the words had sunk in, a chilly, shuddering feeling had taken possession of his body. He had the sensation of stepping into the dampness of a grave, and it was not much better because he had always known that the grave was there and waiting for him.
Sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system.
19 before the hour. All right, that finishes chapter 14. When we return a week from Monday, we will pick it up with chapter 15 if you are following along. Let's go back to our phone calls. Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going? You know, it's very appropriate that you're reading from Orwell, considering the way the Bush administration behaves. You know, it was Orwell who said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Yeah.
And I hope you continue to keep telling the truth, even to those Republicans who don't want to hear it. You know, the fact is Bush is just an incompetent, unbelievably bad president. I mean, 3 years later, after he said mission was accomplished, and he said major combat operations in Iraq had ended, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing we're doing. We're just killing people. That's all we're doing. Killing our own soldiers for what? So Halliburton can make money? Now this war has to end.
Yeah, that's why I'd label it as nothing but repeated acts of murder. There's no objective in Iraq, none, zero. Everything that took us there, took our soldiers there, was absolute lies, not based on lies, but were lies, everything. And once that was discovered, then the pressure from the American public, the pressure from the Congress should have been so immense that these murderous dogs in the White House and the Defense Department would have said, okay, busted, and would have pulled out. Anything subsequent to the truth coming out is now murder, and anything prior to the truth coming out is also murder. This is a horrible time in U.S. history. This is an incredibly bad time. The karma, if you want to use that term, or the injustice that is being perpetrated by this country against these people in Iraq is astonishing. But let's be clear on one thing here. This has been going on in Iraq, courtesy of the United States and the United Kingdom, since 1991, since George Herbert Walker Bush and his coalition, which included some Arab states, invaded that country. And once that war was over, the sanctions placed against the Iraqi people by enforced by Bill Clinton for 8 years and picked up by George Bush Jr. until he invaded, those sanctions killed hundreds of thousands of people, disease, birth defects, deformities, because we the first time around we saturated their country with depleted uranium. We are responsible for a 12 or 14 year long atrocity against the people of Iraq. I don't know how the United States is ever going to cleanse its aura from this. I really don't. This is a horrifying chapter, and it's not just Bush. Clinton was involved in this too. So let's put it where it belongs.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, impeaching Bush and Cheney would be a good start.
I think
so. These idiots in the White House, what do they want to do? What is their solution to this problem? Their solution is to extend their killing spree into Iran, and they're using the same damn lies about weapons of mass destruction. Over and over again, the same crap they fed us a few years ago, and the media is buying it again. It's ridiculous. Bush is a liar.
I don't think, I agree with everything you just said, but I don't think that this criminal administration is going to attack Iran for one reason. We don't have the resources to do it. We don't have the army. We don't have the available military to do it. If we do it, it's only going to be with tactical nuclear weapons, and I don't think the American people will stand for that.
You know Bush is a crazy idiot, and this guy wants to bring on Armageddon. He's one of those idiots who believes in the Book of Revelations and all this crap about Armageddon. Bush is a scary character, and we need to impeach him and get him out of there immediately.
I hear you. Thanks for checking in, Jake. We create the insurgents through our acts of terrorism by massacring their families for no reason. And then when they respond, as any human being would, we slaughter even more of them. And they come back at us, and the killing is justified on our part by labeling them insurgents.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour, thanks to our New York crew for the program tonight and all this week. Engineering handed by Justin Yuen and our resident rock star at Air America, Jason Isaac. D. Neal is our associate producer and also handles your phone calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program. And Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Day. Again, all next week, Peter Werby, my good friend from Detroit, will be filling in for me. We'll be back Monday, the 27th of March. So behave yourself. Don't make me come back here and, you know, have to take care of things, all right? Ron is calling from Davis, California. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Listen, make sure you take care of yourself, okay? Find a cab and do something and turn everything off.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, because you're a man among men. I mean, you are at the pinnacle. And even though I can't stand to listen to you because I get numb, there's nobody that can even touch you within 1,000 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, right. No, I'm serious. So
we need you
alive.
Yeah, but if it drives listeners away, right? You know.
No, it doesn't drive me away. I mean, what I mean is I just can't listen sometimes for 3 hours because it's just too much baby blood mist or something.
I know what you mean.
I don't mind when you get on the rants because you speak the truth and you.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying.
Well, I've been listening to you for 2 years.
Oh my goodness.
The other thing is, and I know this is going to tempt you to look at the news and all that stuff, but the Iranian burst is supposed to start on March 20. Now that's Monday. The Iranian oil burst.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be trading in petro euros.
Now that's like a commodities market, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, it means they're going to be trading in petro euros, which Russia wants to trade in, and Europe wants to trade in, and China wants to trade in. And the petro dollar is the worldwide denomination right now for buying oil. About 80% of the world, if Peru wants to buy oil from the United Emirates, they have to use petro dollars. So on Monday, I've read articles where all hell is going to break loose.
It very definitely could if the Iranians go through with this. Now, I thought I read something the other day that said there has been this whole idea has been put on hold, that the Iranians have put this on hold. I don't know if that's true or not, but the fact is, which as you're presenting it, if all of a sudden the lingua franca or whatever you want to call it becomes euros rather than dollars, yeah, the United States is in deep doo-doo. We are in real.
Well, it would be afloat for a while. In other words, the dollar would just keep sinking against the euro. So it's not like it's going to happen overnight. But if the United States attacks Iran with many nukes, and the Israelis have a whole plan to attack Iran. They even have loading stations because the F-15s won't go that far, so they have to refuel an American aircraft carrier or whatever. So we may have the Russians do it, and they may have to use mini nukes and so forth. And this could unfold. And we'll have to see whether or not the Iranian oil burst opens on Monday, because this terrifies. And the bullcrap we'll be getting is, oh, Iran's going to have these nukes. It's going to be weapons of mass destruction, blah, 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 blah. And all they're really obsessed with is the petro euro.
Yeah, well, and you're telling me not to watch TV while I'm gone. No.
Yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying.
We want to keep you healthy.
I hear what you're saying. The Chinese have an old curse that says, may you live in interesting times.
I know. Actually, that's really a coincidence. I was going to say that to you.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, and my feeling is, and I don't know, I hate to be that negative, but regarding the whole thing, we mustn't forget that we're a member of a 40,000-year-old species and who has raped and plundered and killed among itself for 40,000 years. And this is just an extension of it. And America is just like a little patch on a grapefruit. I mean, the Russians are up to no good. The Chinese are up to no good. The Iranians are up to no good. Everybody's up to no good. And I believe geopolitical forces will just take over, and this whole thing is going to go. There's no cure. It's over. Done.
Well, that's a good reason for everybody to take a vacation then. Hey, listen, I have to leave.
Yeah, and on a happy note.
Yeah, I have to leave it. Absolutely.
You know, but,
Ron, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. But, again, we're just flat out of time. I'm sorry I didn't get to you, Habu, Rogers, Ray, Craig, and Tim. But we've got about 15 seconds left, and I don't want to say hello and then say goodbye. Take care this week coming. The caller's absolutely right. There is some weird stuff coming if it does come. So I hope you've got your water supply and your dehydrated rice and wheat germ and everything, a nice supply laid in, right? Don't forget the bathroom tissue. Huh. I'll see you when I get back. Take care. I'm Mike Beloy. This is Air America Radio.
I'm going straight.
Oh, yeah, watch your back. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Malloy on Air America Radio.
Now out on DVD, Good Night and Good Luck. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director George Clooney. A critically acclaimed award-winning film about the historic showdown between journalist Edward R. Murrow and Senator Joseph McCarthy. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone calls it an electrifying movie event, and David Anson of Newsweek hails it as one of the best movies of the year. Don't miss this brilliant, thought-provoking film, Good Night and Good Luck, on DVD now.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda Can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the final ketonuric, though. Mm. Sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.